No, not really.
General caching. And that makes, I think, the proposal a lot more interesting and challenging. Because SSDs are sort of a very narrow problem, and that would not justify asking for a large amount of money. That's the main problem with going in that direction. And moreover, I think a stronger reason for not doing that is that I would like for us to work on problems that apply to caching in general. And
probably many of those, any idea you come up with will probably be applicable. But then I think he pointed out that many of the, if we come up with some architectural change that's needed to achieve this, there's going to be much more resistance to do it in the cache than in SSD. At least that's the impression I got.
Yes, that's true. And the SSDs are a lot more pliable because they can be partitioned in whichever way you want and so on. But let me try to go over this a little bit more slowly.
Okay.
And the goal for today would be to maybe fine-tune our direction a little bit and also to identify parts of the proposal where each of you would be able to contribute in a more substantial way, right? And I have some ideas for that as well, but, you know, ideally, you know, if you can come up with those things on your own, I think that would be best. So the high-level theme, as I see it, is what I mentioned in the email, which is managing caches in consolidated environments. And by consolidated, I mean environments where you have not one but several workloads running at the same time, sharing caches at various levels of the hierarchy, right? And this, I think, makes the problem new and something that is worth funding. I think there's just small change, which is the fact that there are multiple contending workloads sharing these caches, whereas in the past that was not as much of an issue because you would have workloads that would have exclusive access to these caches. So from a historical standpoint, and what exists in the literature is if you have a workload using a cache, then how do you model the cache requirements of the workload? And there have been lots and lots of work in this space. So all of that provides some of the background for what we want to do, which is take the next step, right? And the next step is
so the reason they focus only on one workload is because they assume that you would just add these up if there were more. Is that?
Well, I think that's one way to look at it. I think perhaps naively,
surprising to me. Why would
it's surprising. One assumption was that you would have one workload running on one cache or utilizing a cache. And if you look at the servers from before, right, there would be one piece of software that would run on the cache, right? And it would be serving a set of requests.
You mean whatever process is running on the processor that
utilizing the cache and so on. But right now, because of multi-core, that's one significant change that has occurred recently, right? You have multiple simultaneous cores that run processes that allow multiple processes to be running at the exact same instant. So utilizing the cache at the exact same instant.
Sharing a cache.
Right? And these workloads are sharing cache space at all levels, you know, starting from the CPU caches, the L1, L2, L3 caches, and the main memory, right, which is a cache for storage. And now we have new layers of caching in the hierarchy, particularly the most prominent one now, which is accepted by everyone, is the SSD-based caches on the host side, right? So there are all these levels of caching that are all being contended upon. So I think the point of the proposal being that this is a new problem, because there is a, you know, there is multiple workloads that run, and cache contention is a lot more than what it used to be. And the other part of the proposal, which I think is going to be a selling point, is to show that this is a significant problem. It's a serious problem. And that ties to, you know, the concept of wastage that Ricardo had in his defense, right? Because this wastage has a superlinear growth with respect to the size of a single working set, right? Because every workload contends with every other workload and waste space. So that, I think, provides us a good justification for why you want to look at this problem very seriously and carefully again. So that's sort of what I'm thinking right now. In terms of the goals, yes, you have some sense of for what the, you know, what might be the source of some problem, but then what is it that you're trying to optimize, and what are the objectives and goals of the work? And I think I see the objectives as, again, as something that's flexible and we can build upon. I have some ideas. For instance, we could optimize for cache efficiency, right? And by cache efficiency, I simply define it as reducing the miss rate at every cache level. But that might not be the best objective from a system management or resource management standpoint. So you might want to optimize for something like per workload performance guarantees, right? So to provide some sort of latency guarantees or throughput guarantees. And I think that is perhaps more interesting and useful, right, than simply in maximizing the cache efficiency, which could also be done. So in terms of doing
so, cache efficiency is just the sort of the reverse concept of miss rate.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So how efficiently are you using the cache itself as a resource? If you look at it blindly and opaquely. The best way to characterize its efficiency would be to look at the miss rate at the cache level. Right. So the thing is that although I'm saying we would like to have theories that span all these different levels of caches, it is also true that these caches are actually very different in nature. In one particular aspect, which is the partitionability of the caches, right? So if you have CPU caches, unless you're buying like really high-end IBM servers, you get absolutely no partitionability of the cache at all. If you go one level up, which is main memory is partitionable, right? Because the operating system can choose to allocate specific pieces of memory to specific workloads, assuming that the operating system can identify workloads. For the SSD cache, again, it's partitionable, because the OS can, again, choose to allocate. So along the dimension of partitionability, these caches become very different. And the question is, you know, how can we enable or provide these objectives of maximizing cache efficiency or providing per workload performance guarantees in both of, under both of these assumptions or under both of these
but isn't the hierarchy sort of linear, and at some point above this point everything is partitionable and everything below
it is so in some sense what I'm saying is that you would need techniques that address both partitionable caches as well as unpartitionable caches.
Yes.
Non-partitionable caches and these techniques would probably be end up being different, right? So that's another dimension to the proposal. What is new here? I think what is new here is the direction that we want to address interference at the cache level at a very in a very fundamental way, right? By understanding this interference, and either provisioning for the wastage induced by the interference, or to do partitioning in an optimal way, so that besides eliminating such wastage, you also ensure that the cache is utilized properly, right? Because of, under these partitions, right? So I think that's the high-level goal. There are a couple of minor things that you know that seem to be extensions, or maybe just additional things in case we are lacking for material, which is the idea of eliminating duplication inside the cache. Right, that's one aspect, which we've already done quite a bit of work for main memory caches in that space. Right. So then the new would be, well, the same sort of duplication could also occur at CPU cache levels, where the resources are even more scarce. So you want to make sure that there is minimization of duplication.
So the problem of partitioning would become different if you deal with caches that have that.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you attribute, if you eliminate duplicates, then you need to attribute that
right.
that shared cache line to all the workloads that benefit from the cache line, right?
Right.
Partitioning becomes a slightly different problem there. But I see the duplication elimination. I mean, it could be central to the proposal, but I don't see it very well integrated in the overall direction of the proposal.
Yeah, well, partitioning is easier if they all are disjoint.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it becomes quite messy.
Right, but at the same time, I think that eliminating duplication is really critical, because caches are such scarce resources, and you don't want to waste any portion of it storing stuff that you could not store.
So going back to the first point, you said that you think the proposal should focus on general caches rather than say SSDs.
Right. It should. Let me take that back. What I wanted to say is that I'd like to have a proposal that's broader than a single SSD cache, and that might mean addressing several different types of caches, right? And that could also mean that there is some underlying theory that applies irrespective of whether caches are partitionable, whether they are large or small, right?
Because it seems like it would be easier to sell if you're addressing a newer technology, right? Saying that nobody has worked on this new technology, or there's not enough work on it, and therefore these problems are of interest. Of course, there's always this added benefit that it could even benefit cache technology.
Right.
That is saying that if it's there in the title, for instance, would that be easier to sell or harder to sell?
Yeah, it could work both ways, I think.
Right.
I think the one part which I sort of missed out on, so I talked about partitionable and non-partitionable caches. There is another dimension which is also important, and that is whether your caches are in the I/O path or not, right? Or in the workload access path or not, and that changes how you manage the cache,
right?
So if you remember,
so it's not a linear hierarchy.
Yeah, it's not a strict hierarchy like what we saw in Ricardo's defense. That there are some caches that are inclusive by nature. Other caches are not. There's some caches where if you access the level below the cache, you always access the level above, right? So you cannot access a lower level without accessing the level on top, right? And then there are caches where you could access a lower level without accessing the level above it. And that changes the management of the cache in a somewhat subtle way, right? So that's another dimension that we could tie into this proposal. I don't know if we will be spreading ourselves too thin, but at least for now, I'm thinking that we'd like to create a proposal that addresses caching at all levels, all types, and all, you know, across all dimensions, right? So that's really what I want to do. And maybe that would mean that we are stretching ourselves a bit too thin, but until I get a clear sense of what the research questions are, it'll be hard to say. But I'd like to hear what you think. Ming, do you have any thoughts?
I agree with the general direction. One comment that I think the cash sharing, cash management, I think has been done quite successfully with the digital architecture community, even for the community in the last few years. I've seen some papers, but I haven't seen anybody studying wastage. I think that's something unique. You had us work. But still, I think there's some, there's quite some work there that we have to look into.
Right. So if you can, you know, point us to specific,
yes,
or maybe you know, one of your contributions could be to make the related literature survey richer by bringing in those aspects of caching and cache management for consolidated workloads of the architecture community. So I'm afraid I don't know much about what's going on in that community.
Sure.
But do you have some high-level sense for what is it that they do? What are the problems?
I have papers that study, say, the cache interference between different workloads.
Hmm. What's the goal then, though?
The goal is to the general is minimize cache contention. You can migrate the workloads across cores.
But is it more to study or to address it? Do they have solutions, or is it more a study to see how much interference?
But they have solutions, yeah. Because
if they have solutions, they typically have hardware or architectural solutions, and one could see whether some of these carry over to software based. Yeah.
Right. So I'm glad you brought that up, because as we were discussing last time, for non-partitionable caches, there are things that you can do besides simply provisioning the cache itself to not just store the working sets, but also the induced wastage, because you cannot eliminate wastage in non-partitionable caches, right? So you can do the provisioning, but you can do other more interesting things, which is probably where the architecture folks are going with this, which is, okay, let's pair up workloads where wastage is minimized, where interference is minimized. Maybe they don't quantify the level of interference, or they do, but there has to be some way to match up workloads based on some metric, right?
Mm.
So it may not be wastage, but it could be like a parallel metric which achieves the same goal,
right?
So that's one direction which I think we could explore for non-partitionable caches. And I think we should, because that's a very practical direction. So if you have a set of workloads and you have a set of cores, you map those workloads to the, set of caches, you map sets of workloads to cache, right? So that wastage is minimized.
Well, so I think Ricardo's example showed that wastage is really a function of relative speeds of these axes, which is not characterized in any way in the information that what's characterized in JMRCs. That information is simply non-existent. So wastage is dependent on something external that's not there in any of this information. That's important, because
I think that's, yeah, absolutely right. I think you hit the nail on the head. That's sort of the real fine point in the way.
You need some other. So it's not a question of just saying, oh, these two can be thought of as one workload now, because you can't. It really depends on the relative speeds.
Yes.
And the relative speeds looks like, I'm assuming it can change with no warning.
Right.
Or maybe you're assuming it's not. Maybe some assumptions could be made there. I'm not sure. But to me, it seems that one can probably theoretically prove that pairings in this manner, at least with the information that's provided to you in the MRCs or latencies, are now going to help you.
Hmm. So then I think what Ricardo was trying to model there was something more specific than just the speed of access of the cache. It was trying to model the rate at which elements of the cache get reused by each workload, or the cache gets flooded, or the rate at which the cache gets flooded by a workload with elements that it never reuses or doesn't reuse for a long period of time. Right? So those are really the properties that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they are outside of the concept of a working set itself. So in one of the papers that I pointed you to, I don't know if I shared it with you, but this is part of Ricardo's thesis where we model waste states, right? And in terms of this working set plus these additional terms of flood and reuse rates. And that gives us a quantifiable waste state, right? And if we have a quantifiable waste state for pairs of applications or pairs of workloads, then maybe that is a metric for us to minimize when we do workload to cache mapping for multiple caches and multiple workloads. So Ming, do you see, you know, maybe
the thing that kind of bothered me in his work was how come there are not even because we are assuming that lots of things are it's a random test, right? I mean, I think even if accesses were random, how come there were no situations where you get negative wastage? That bothered me. How come it didn't happen that you know, one workload got had a benefit from the other one not using its allocation, so to speak?
I think the concept of wastage is independent of the amount of cache an application needs, right? So that's the working set of the application, right? And in the absence of any contention. If the cache is
looking at the at where it levels off, not at any intermediate level. At intermediate levels, you could have benefits, but not at the
right. And here is the equation that Ricardo had in his presentation, right, which we had spent quite some time talking about. And I think this is sort of a central concept in this work, which I feel in that. This proposal could use as a central component, right, where we say, okay, wastage is, and this is wastage of that application I induces on the cache when co-located with some other application J, right? I remember correctly at this was a ceiling function, and we had the rate of flooding, right, divided by this quantity times the ERSS of I. So this is C, C, this is I. And that's what we have in the equation. And what this is saying is, okay, the amount of wastage or wasted space, because
J was flooding.
Because I is flooding J. Right.
The other way, right? F is flooding and R is reuse, right?
I think on J, it should be I. Sorry. Mixed up there. Should be I, should be J. And J. So J is the sort of the innocent workload in this. Because I is messing up J, but of course J is not innocent because you have sort of this other side as well, right? And that's wastage as well. But let's just look at the one-sided wastage induced by I and running with J. The flood rate of I, like how much it floods the cache, in proportion to the flood rate of I plus the reuse rate. So you can think of the wastage as becoming bigger as the flood rate of I starts increasing relatively to the reuse rate of J. So the better Jay reuses the cache, the better chance it has of holding on to its working set. Right? Because the higher the elements of its working set would be in the LRU stack, and it won't get up with messed up because of the flooding due to I. Right? So that's the fraction that we're looking at here, which will tell us, well, how badly the wastage is. And again, you have this multiplicative factor here because what you do need additional space for is all the elements of J in the working set that you're going to miss. That's the wastage. So this is sort of the central equation, which I think Ricardo could have explained better, but I think it's still valid, right? And one point is maybe we can do this itself, right?
Yeah.
And maybe there is a better way to express this wastage,
yeah,
but this is the best we could come up with, right? And then there's this other thing where, you know, your wastage is this pairwise of all possible INGs, right? And that's the total amount of extra cache space that you need to provision if your cache is not partitionable, so that all of these working sets are always cache resident and they don't get evicted because of flooding.
I kind of forgot, does this concept also apply to a partitionable cache?
Yeah, I mean, it applies to any cache. With partitionable caches, you can separate out the working set so that the flooding does not affect the
wastage.
But for that, you need to partition the cache.
So this
that wastage can be made zero.
So
maybe you want to ask a different question.
How do you partition?
How do you partition?
How do you decide the partition?
Okay, so the partition is just this ERSS.
Right.
Right? That should be the size of the partition.
Mm.
And then within each partition, you cannot allow elements of any other workload to be introduced into the partition.
And then the wastage is zero, right?
Wastage is zero. The reason wastage is non-zero is because, you know, flooding can actually push out elements of that get reused.
Mm.
Right? And that causes the wastage. Now,
okay.
You know, going back to this, right, is this the best expression of wastage and this pairwise formulation?
Yeah.
We don't know.
So
I think that
yeah, that's, for instance, when you do summation over all Wij, they are not different. The effect on J, how does it go? The effect on J by I and the effect on K, sorry.
So you mean, so let's say
if I take two such pairs, right?
So
I to J and K to J, let's say.
And yes.
They may have common elements. So
right, but I think the wastage that I uses on J is because of the flooding that I does.
Correct.
And that pushes out certain fraction of the working set of J.
Yeah.
The flooding that K does will push out additional elements in K.
So essentially, this is assuming that wastage due to I plus K on J is the sum of those two. And that
is not, I think that's
as bad an assumption as this, the original addition.
You're right, yeah. So
okay.
Is this equal to this plus this or not?
And that's why I was suggesting you need to look at subsets. I mean, the most general version is that you take every subset and you have its effect on this.
Right. And so I think Ming asked a very relevant question, which is, well, if your cache is partitionable, then all of this it's not relevant all that much, right?
But
it's not all that useful.
But I see a very interesting trade-off there, because even if the cache is partitionable, you don't want to strictly partition it.
Right.
Because you're making it not more conservative.
True.
Mm-hmm. But the moment you make it work observing, you do strict partitioning and then you introduce wastage.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting trade-off there.
Right. So in other words, what you're saying is that if you partition the cache and certain partitions get underutilized, then by preventing wastage, you are inducing this other form of wastage.
Right.
Where
this is what I was
underutilization.
So benefit from others underutilization.
Right. Okay, so going back to that question, which is, well,
yeah, so
can wastage ever be zero or not, or negative?
No, that question was wrong, so it's not okay. I understand that.
Yeah. The question is not wrong. I think it's just the way we define wastage does not allow for...
At the end. At that point, there's no more benefit by providing extra.
Right.
And that's the region you're interested in, not in this earlier region.
The way we formulate this wastage is, does not allow for a negative quantity, right?
Yeah.
And but by partitioning, you couldn't use wastage. I think that's a really good observation, right? That your non-work reserving partitions could cause wastage as well.
Yeah.
And maybe that's equally bad as non-partition wastage.
Well, you sort of said that earlier, saying you can address this by over-provisioning, which is a form of wastage.
Yes.
Which is also a form of wastage, just like partitioning.
Well, over-provisioning should be equal to the wastage that you come up with using all these for a non-partitionable cache, so that there is no misses for working sets, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you do have partitioning, then one way to look at it is that you have temporary periods of underutilization of those partitions.
Sure.
But then when you compute the next working set after the next interval, you will probably adjust for that. Right. So the questions there are, first of all,
so then for a single process, are there studies for behavior of reuse, I guess?
You mean,
so let's forget the fact that there is more than one. There's only one workload. And you want to know how well the cache is being used. If it's only being used for things that are going to get kicked out, that are never going to be used again, then it's wastage, right? So how much of it is sort of wasted on crappy things sitting around?
So this ERSS that we compute is based on reuse. It's called the effective reuse set size.
Okay.
Right. So it only contains elements that get reused.
Right. So are there studies on behavior? How does it behave? Are there distributions?
So for instance, there's this concept of miss rate curves, right?
Yeah.
And the miss rate curve is
that doesn't tell you as a function of time. That only gives you a function of its size.
Right.
So what about function of time?
Right. So this miss rate curve is not a stationary quantity, it's a dynamic quantity. A miss rate curve goes from one state to the next state. So it means that this is also a time dependent quantity.
Why does that change over time?
Because the workload changes over time. Right, so the workload changes over time, the curves change. So it now looks something very different.
Mm-hmm.
And then each time, you know, you want to understand the workload all over again, you construct one of these miss rate curves. And that is one way to determine what the ERSS is. Right? And based on that, you recompute the wastages to determine, okay, well, for instance, the non-partitionable case, the only thing which I can do is to move processes around. Or maybe migrate a virtual machine. If a virtual machine is the granularity,
yeah.
You could migrate virtual machines from one host to another host because, you know, the caches are being thrashed by the co-located virtual machines. But this is what would need to happen, that you online reconstruct MRCs every few seconds or minutes. And then the granularity there, by the way, is also interesting, right? When do you recompute MRCs? And there is this famous paper by Jim Gray. It's called the 5-minute rule for the effectiveness of main memory caches. Right? And one way to look at this granularity is to measure the amount of time it takes to populate a cache. And then you want to construct a duration where the amount of time to populate the cache is a really small duration, or fraction of that entire duration. Because once you compute an MRC, you want that MRC to be valid much farther or much farther along beyond the population of the cache with the new working set. Right? So let's say something like 5% of the time is spent in populating the cache with a new working set, and 95% of the time is the cache is being utilized to reuse the working set, then it might be a good way of determining what these granularities at which you recompute working sets should be. Right? So that's one approach which is at least justifiable at some level. Right? Now we could pick a random interval like what Ricardo did for his thesis, 5 minutes, and redo working sets after that. But I think, you know, for a proposal we'll need a more reasoned approach to say that, okay, we want to recompute working sets based on these criteria. Right. So the 5 minute rule paper provides a thought in that direction, but it's a very different application of that same idea here. Right. In computing, you know, the intervals for working sets. There's this other restriction, which is the granularity of measurement of all of these things. Right. The flooding rates and reuse rates. So your interval cannot be smaller than the interval at which you can generate this information. Right? But I don't think that should be a concern. Right? I think that populating a cache completely and saying that that's going to be 1% or 5% of the duration of the interval will sufficiently allow for getting all of this information in time.
So what I'm hearing then is that a fundamental property of any solution should be that it's adaptive.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Adaptive to perhaps several.
Yeah, I think that should be like absolutely right. We should make that explicit in the proposal. Is that we are going after adaptive solutions and not stationary solutions. Because workloads are adaptive in nature.
Optimal solutions like time t are not meaningful.
Yes, correct. Right. Right. So, in terms of the structure of the proposal, I was thinking a little bit.
MRC doesn't change until the working set changes, right?
Shouldn't change. But the MRC might change in terms of, for instance, instead of being like this, it could be like this. This is sort of the same boundaries, but
the same working set?
The same working set. It's just that the working set is being reused less frequently. This is the rate, right? On the y-axis. The rate might go down, but you might still reuse the same set of elements.
Well, it has to flatten out at the same level, but it can probably have other fluctuations. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, at least I had some initial ideas as to where, you know, we could all contribute, and I think Giri, you know, it seems like you're naturally leaning towards modeling wastage.
Yeah, that's one, but more interestingly, adaptive algorithms are of interest.
Okay.
I think that's something that's
so the adaptive, for instance, the adaptive MRC construction.
So there's this very recent, beautiful algorithm for clustering, and it's a very adaptive algorithm.
Hmm.
Not that this has anything to do with clustering, but it's based on this theory of belief and propagation networks in some way. Again, based on probabilistic networks and such. So it's possible that some of those techniques might be useful here. Because all of this is believing, it's based on a belief that working set exists, such and such is the load, etc., etc. And if those things change, the whole belief network has to change. And so maybe this can be modeled using something like that. And I would be that's what I would try to write down, although I have no research along those lines, but can't be all that
Yeah, but I think at the proposal stage, you know, there could be elements of the proposal that are completely exploratory, right?
Yeah.
Where you do not have much prior work, but you have a reasoned direction that you can justify that it would worth pursuing, right? Based on, you know, some arguments and theories and so on. So I think that's fine. Let's see, am I missing something?
So just a static problem. Let's say you have this space that you want to use, and there are 10 people using it, and they're all using at different rates, and at different times they need different amounts of the space. How do you manage this?
Hmm.
Just this basic problem itself is interesting, and I think that I'm sure there will be some. There's probably some research on this, and that's where I would like to start.
Hmm.
At what time do you say, okay, I can only handle 9 out of these 10 people? I have to just reduce the scale. What time do you say, I should we handle all of these without any problem?
So you're talking about admission control. I mean, that's referred to as admission control in many communities.
Could be, yeah, sure.
Say,
because that seems like what you would be doing here at some level.
Right. So the next. I guess the next higher level question beyond admission control is mapping, right? So if you have a set of workloads and you have a set of caches, well, how do you group them and map them to the caches?
Sure. Yeah. But again, if we go for an adaptive solution, what we have to then think about is how
the
we
cost.
Change this.
Is the cost,
what is
the
cost of changing something? At what time do you say I have to downsize in order to be able to handle this load, and you start to carve out the right pieces to the right places.
Right.
And again, if we think of sort of these virtual machine migration type problem, then it has to be on the fly. You have to figure out where it is you want to migrate it to.
Yeah, exactly. So the broader question is, where does the workload go? Either it goes to some other cache on the same host, or it goes to some other host itself, right? So I think there are many interesting algorithmic questions there.
Yeah.
And the cost of moving a workload is not just, even within a single host, it's not just the context switch cost or, storing the context in, restoring the context in a different core. But it's also the cost of repopulating the cache itself with the working set.
Sure.
Right. So,
but
so
if you're just migrating something out, then you're okay.
But again,
if something comes in, then there's a cost of repopulating.
Yes.
So just an ignorant question: if there's multiple cores, you don't have multiple caches?
Oh yeah, you do. Yeah.
You do.
So.
So it just depends on the level, is it?
Depends on the level, yes. So you use the same processor, they share the same mass level cache, but each core may have its own private L1 and L2. If you have multiple processors, then you have multiple mass level cache. Depends on the hierarchy.
So here's a picture, actually. Oh yeah, there it is. Right. So here is the cores. Here you have 4 processors. Each processor has 4 cores, C0 through C3.
Right.
And each core has local L1 and L2.
Yeah.
Right. And a shared L3
mm-hmm.
on the same
on
the same processor.
Right.
So, but. Core 0 here does not contend with core 0 there for any cache.
Got it. Yeah. And L1 and L2, presumably L1 comes before L2 in the
speed
hierarchy.
Yeah, in terms of speed, yes.
And L2 is presumably bigger and slower.
Yes.
So all those characteristics will still remain as a
hierarchy. Yeah, it's a hierarchy.
But these, for instance, core 0 does not contend for L1 and L2 with any other core.
And there might be another cache at the higher level?
That's main memory.
That's already straight away. Yeah. Oh yeah, so these are the
main memory. But this is what is called the NUMA architecture, non-uniform memory access, because accessing this local memory, the main memory, is faster than accessing a remote main memory. And actually here there is a hierarchy of DRAM access speeds as well. So this 327 here is what is the speed.
Yeah.
How many cycles you need to access DRAM.
Uh-huh. So that processor is closer, so it takes a little bit less time than this guy, which is further away or something like that.
Yes. So these are all modern NUMA systems.
Okay.
Got it. Yeah, but I think for the purpose of this proposal, we can...
Probably doesn't matter. The important thing is the presence of a hierarchy. I think it's enough just to look at two levels of the hierarchy. I think that you need to know when to send something up, or down, as the case may be.
Hmm.
So my guess is that it's enough just to study a two-level system.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned Nimrod Megiddo, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's done quite a bit of work.
Right. Yeah, so that's one place where I would start. I would start with some of these adaptive techniques that people have developed.
Right, and then there has been follow-up work from IBM Research about exclusive caching and things like that. But I don't know if we need to extend the proposal in that direction about figuring out what to store at every level of
so the that's cache. What I'm saying. I think all you need to know is my current level of the hierarchy, and when I need to, and how I deal with the next level. I don't think you need to know anything more, because that level itself will have the same picture. Will say, how am I going to organize data over here, and when do I need to go to the next level?
Right. So if you remember Ricardo's presentation,
he had a section that I've not looked at.
Which one?
He had a section there about levels and when...
Yeah, the ERSS tree, right?
Which I have not read. That's also in the paper you sent me.
So that's, I think, important to understand, because you have all these different working sets at different levels, and all of them have different sizes. And once you have such a tree, or an approximate notion of such a tree for a workload, then what you would do is to go about mapping each of those levels to specific levels in the cache hierarchy.
Why should working sets be different? I'm not sure.
You mean, why would an application have a hierarchy of working sets?
Uh-huh.
That's typically
the
case.
The time frame is different, is it?
The time frame is different. And the reuse rates of these subsets of working sets are also different. So you might, could also be different. So these are two possibilities, right? And both could be true at the same time. One is that you're looking at a smaller granularity, or also you're looking at a piece of the working set that's being reused a lot more than a larger piece of the working set.
But in any case, it's going to be a subset. This is a subset relationship.
Yeah, there would be a subset relationship. And also, a similar hierarchical relationship occurs in the levels of caches as well. So the point being, once you have this tree, you would map these working sets to specific levels,
sure.
And that would tell you, okay, which other working set are these guys contending with?
But that's what I mean. I think that you only need a picture of your level and the next level. There's no reason for you to worry about seven levels above you, because the next level will worry about what things go about.
Yeah, I was thinking just worry about one level, right?
Right.
Not even two, because once you know, let's say, a certain working set from some workload would need to fit in this level of cache, then, and then you know this information for all workloads, then you can, do these things, right? The the wastage computations, the partitioning of that cache level, all of that. And certainly, I mean, what you're talking about and what, you know, the work from Megiddo and those guys, they're talking about, okay, well, if you have multiple levels and you want to, you know, figure out what to evict from one level, the best thing to store in the next level, right, as things get evicted from the previous level, I think that's a complementary question, which I think has been addressed quite a bit extensively. So if we step on that, then we might get pushed back. That's my concern. So to be on the safer side, I feel like we should go after wastage and contention for a single level. In a more comprehensive way.
Well, whatever little I read of Ricardo's chapter, he argues that unless you address all the levels of the hierarchy, you're not doing a fair job.
True. But what I'm saying is that whether the interactions between different levels need to be addressed.
It's important.
No, I think it is important, very important. But the problem is that there's been a lot of work by really well-established people.
So we don't have to do work on along those lines, but at least that has to be accounted for.
Yes.
Even if we take solutions from whoever has worked on this, that's fine.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to do it.
So that's the question I have. So how the proposal, how we going to connect all these different levels?
So using the ERSS tree, right? And to say that every level of the tree, that's why I was going to bring up the presentation itself. Okay, well, this is not a tree, but it's in the that's probably one of the chapters. So this is such an ERSS tree, right? And we can map these levels of trees to different levels of the caching hierarchy. The working set is smaller than a certain level, it's probably going to be resident in that level. Unless there is so much contention that it must reside in the next level. Right, so that's another interesting thing, right? So we can say, okay, because of this wastage, although it seems like this level should reside in node of the tree should reside in this level, it doesn't turn out to be the case, right? In fact, it needs to be accommodated in the next level.
So that's what I meant by it being totally transparent. You're going to have a controller for each of these nodes.
Yes, right? An independent controller.
And that controller just needs to decide whether it's pushing some stuff up the chain or down the chain.
Right.
So it doesn't need to know anything more than this. And how you start with is probably irrelevant because the whole thing is adaptive. And as time goes on, it figures out how things are going to get balanced. That's how I see all of this. The entire tree is good just to know that this hierarchy exists.
Right.
Other than that, your control is going to be completely with your neighbors, and your neighbors are just what's up and what's down.
Right.
And I'm not even sure you need to be concerned about what's down. You only have to worry about what needs to go up when things get out of hand. If things are actually becoming better and better, you don't have to worry about it. Somebody will give you more stuff to catch.
The good thing is that as you go higher up in the level of the tree, right, it's you're always targeting a larger working set, which contains the working set below it.
Correct.
So in some sense,
more space to deal with,
right,
and more resources to deal with, and their workflow characteristics may be completely different, and they may be quite all right at that point.
And so my sense is that you don't even have to worry about the communicating with the guy above you, because it's automatic, right? Because the larger working set that contains your working set, the best you can...
No, but he needs to know that it's not here, right? I mean, the... L1 cache, L2 cache needs to know that it's not in the L1 cache.
So all of this is dumb hardware, right? So the controller, as we are talking about controllers at each levels, what we are ultimately talking about is the operating system itself, which has a map of what might be going on at every level of the cache,
mm-hmm.
right? And the operating system sees, okay, for this specific CPU, L3 is being contended upon, right? And I have these four workloads running on these cores, right? And can the new working sets for these four workloads fit in the L3 cache? And if not, do I need to make a change? And what change do I make? Do I move the workload on C0 to C12, right? So that the L3 cache doesn't get trashed, right? So that's sort of a global view that the operating system would have. So although
yeah.
you're right that in some sense this global view will be composed of sort of this controllers
yeah.
within a single piece of software,
yeah.
right, that maybe things has intelligence about, okay, what's the size of the cache,
yeah.
what are the working
has
sets.
Limited information and limited intelligence, and it just looks at the world from standing over here and says, okay, I have to change this
yes.
in this manner.
Yeah.
And if we are already committed to an adaptive solution, that's the only thing it can do.
Yeah. Right. And also, I think as part of this adaptive thing is that there is more adaptation going on more frequently at lower levels of the cache and much more slowly at higher levels of the cache. Right. But all of that is being orchestrated by the operating system. So in some sense, we have this nice central piece of software. Could be an OS, could be a hypervisor if it's a set of virtual machines that are running on the system. But it's all being managed in a central way.
Okay.
So in some sense, you have global knowledge. You're computing these working sets on the fly. Some working sets change more frequently than others. And the system adapts... different levels of the hierarchy at a different rate. So Ming, where do you see your expertise fitting in? I'm sure you see lots of places, right? But where do you feel the most comfortable?
I still have a clear picture of the structure of the proposal.
Okay.
But what would be the sections or?
Good. I'm glad I spent some time thinking about that. Okay. So. Yeah, I sort of started doing something, but I haven't finished it. But what I was thinking is the research directions. I mean, you just want to look at this, right? The research directions, I feel, can be broadly classified as understanding cache contention, right? And here is where I think a lot of the theory work could fit in. Just understanding wastage, the concepts of wastage and going beyond what we've already done, because what we've done is kind of a hack, right, in some sense. It's very quick and dirty, but we've not taken a very very theoretical view of the problem itself so far. So which is why, I mean, Ricardo said, I was kind of disappointed when he said that he just came up with this and tried it out.
Yeah.
But I think there is some justification to why we came up with this, right?
Yeah.
But it's still nowhere close to how it should be. It's still a hack, right? We understand that this is one way of doing it, but is it the best way? Probably not, right? If there's a pairwise wastage and you pointed out that may not be the best way to do this. So that's another thing that might fit in there. But understanding cash contention would just mean when you have multiple workloads and you have a shared cache, what does it mean for cache utilization and contention? And that's a very generic question.
Yeah. And also, he has some experiments which shows a certain behavior. Does this explain that behavior? That's not clear. For instance, he seemed to imply that there was a linear relationship in the number of number of workloads, whereas here it's not clear that it is in linear here.
It's quadratic, right?
It's probably quadratic.
No, what he's
not completely clear.
Oh yeah, yeah. But okay, so when he said linear, he actually meant quadratic.
No.
Yeah, because
his graph shows linear.
And yeah, the graph will show linear, but it's actually quadratic because you have to look at the x and y axis to understand why it's quadratic.
Right. So x axis was number of workloads, and y axis was wastage in percentage.
Right, wastage in percentage, right? So wastage in percentage, how is it defined? Wastage in percentage, say percentage wastage is some fraction x of wastage, right? And
no,
this
some
guy...
Some fraction of the workload size.
Of the total working set size,
yeah.
Or the sum of the working sets.
Right.
And this x is growing linearly, right? So this x is itself a function of w, some linear function of w, times w, is quadratic, right? Which is why you see that linear thing. What would be nice is he had a graph which actually showed that quadratic behavior. That would be nicer, right?
Yes.
And it's much more clear when you compare that with this equation, this other equation.
But he's kind of underselling the problem there by saying that it's linear to the size of the working set. Okay, so that's the first component that I think is relevant and we could expand upon. And the second one is managing contention for non-partitionable caches. And there we have questions like, okay, what can we do for non-partitionable caches? One is that we could provision these caches, right, sufficiently so that working sets don't miss or get missed. And then you could also do CPU scheduling, right?
Which means you put the process on
mapping.
The
yeah, the mapping that I was talking about earlier.
Move it to a different core.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. And that's probably where the architecture guys are spending their most time on. So we might have contributions there from a theoretical standpoint. If we can say, okay, here are the theory problems that the architecture guys haven't looked at, then that might be something new to put in the proposal. Or if the architecture guys have already made a lot of progress there, then maybe we should reconsider this component.
So in that sense, it may be similar to VM migration because just that you are now using cache as a resource.
Yeah.
Right. Just like you have its need for resources in terms of processor and something else, disk space, etc. Now we're looking at cache.
Right. Right. I see this VM, the virtualization versus non-virtualized environment are just two different applications of all the work that we do in this proposal, right? So whatever we do applies to both. It could be that in the virtualized case, the mechanisms are very clear because you have VM migration, whereas in the non-virtualized case, the mechanism would be something like migrating a process from one core to another core. But it's you can do this regardless of whether it's virtualized or non-virtualized.
No, I was trying to draw a parallel between the problems.
So you're saying whether the people who
ultimately
do...
Ultimately, you want to keep this virtual machine here on this on this server, host, whatever it's called, on this host, if it has the right resources to run it.
Right.
If not, you move it elsewhere, which is similar to what you're saying. If it has the cache resource to do it, run it here, otherwise move it to a different core or a different processor.
Right, right. I think there are similar problems, and it could be that the virtualization guys or the architecture folks look at virtualization as a motivating example for some of the work that they do with cache contention management. So Ming, if you can, you know, come up with some summary of that space, I think it would be very useful for us to figure out, you know, whether we want to include this stuff or not. Right? Okay, so that's with respect to the second component, which is managing contention for non-partitionable caches. And then we have managing contention for partitionable caches. And here, I think for partitionable caches, there are DRAM and SSD, and there are two different problems. Because with DRAM, it's a cache that's in the I/O path. But an SSD is a cache that's not in the I/O path, and it causes new problems that need to be addressed.
The implications there are lost, I mean, but that's a different...
So if you remember that, you know, the...
I know, I understand what you mean by it's not in the I/O path, but so what?
The implication is that if you have requests that are larger, requests that are larger than the cache line size, then you can not rely on, the classic convex hull smoothing approaches for finding the minimum points on the MRCs. Right, that's not a very short answer, but that's what it is, because your MRCs become arbitrarily concave.
I'll ask you about that.
Okay, so...
Some other time. We can discuss that later.
Yeah, we can discuss that later, but yeah, I mean, I was going to show you one of Ricardo's slides to make it easy to explain. But anyway, we can do it some other time. So then, managing contention for partitionable caches. And the other direction I feel very strongly about is the validation direction, that we need to have a strong validation component for all of this. And because we are talking about caches at various levels, right? So how do we validate our contributions at each of those levels? Yeah. So this is sort of a high-level split of the research direction as I see it. But there may be more. For instance, each of these guys is, there's a lot more there.
In the end, do you need something to connect all these together?
What do you mean connect?
I mean, if there's a single objective, say, is maximizing the performance, okay, or overall throughput, and then now you have separate mechanisms to deal with non-partitionable and partitionable caches, and then how do you use those mechanisms to satisfy the same goal?
I think that's a good.
And what if in one hierarchy you have both? That's what you're saying, right? If in the hierarchy you have both partitionable as well as non-partitionable levels, how do you deal with all?
So here's my initial thought on that, right? But that's a really missing component here, right?
Mm.
Which I don't haven't really thought about much yet. There are goals of a system, right? And there are mechanisms to meet those goals, different mechanisms, specific to partitionable and non-partitionable caches,
mm-hmm.
right? And the goals themselves should be telescopic in nature, meaning that the high-level goal somehow needs to be boiled down to goals at specific levels of the caches, and
right.
It's not clear how that would happen.
Right.
And the two possibilities there. One is that we spend time thinking about how to do that mapping. Or second, we say that, okay, we are optimizing for different goals at each of these different levels. And these goals are somewhat independent of each other, and they are specified by, let's say, the sysadmin. And there's no integration of these goals. It's just specified, right? And whoever specifies these goals has the intelligence to figure out the right goals to specify. that's not very satisfying, but
probably not.
But that's one direction, or that would be the obvious direction if we don't address it, right? I mean, that's what people will take,
right,
if we don't do anything, yeah, in that direction.
Yeah.
That someone needs to specify these goals, and whoever does it figures it out magically. But yeah, do you see maybe fitting in that aspect of the proposal, the integration aspect?
You mean?
Do you think that you would be interested in addressing that gap?
Well, I would be interested in the measurement of position of a cache, and the integration, I don't know, because I think that has to be done by somebody who has a global view of the entire proposal, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm not sure I'll be capable of doing that.
Okay.
Mm.
Well, then it's... we could talk about it.
Yes, that's definitely.
Maybe,
yeah,
I can get some feedback from you.
Yeah.
I don't have any ideas right away, but I haven't spent much time thinking,
yeah,
about
it. Yeah, I think even the proposal is about, say, fundamental you know, principles and designs of caching. Then we maybe would get away without integrating all of them. We're just talking about the fundamentals. But if the proposal is about a holistic way of managing all the caches in a consolidated environment, then we have to address that.
Yeah, I think the fundamental, whatever you say, sounds very nice, but that's basically copying out on this question, right?
So
but at this point, that's where the proposal stands, because I don't have any concrete direction on that integration question.
Okay.
And maybe it's not critical for the success of this proposal. Maybe there is enough that you see here already that...
I'm not sure. Because caching probably itself has been studied for so long.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, great work has been done there. So it's hard, maybe hard to sell our work as fundamental anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. I think,
yeah,
I think a lot of the foundational work has been done. I think the new here, as I mentioned earlier, is that the contention for caches has not been studied in a systematic fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And from, I think that's at least my theory and my belief, and I may be completely wrong, especially after, maybe after you come up with this literature survey for what,
yeah,
the architecture guys have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe after reading that, I'll figure out that that's not entirely true.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do it very, very, yeah, the second component, there may be a lot of resistance there, yeah. Okay. But definitely there's no work that has considered the, you know, the consolidated, coordinated management of all these different levels, in a highly consolidated environment. I don't think anybody has studied that, but that's something that's currently missing here.
Yeah, so I think that's the first part, which is understanding cache contention, right?
No, I'm talking about how to systematically manage all different levels according to the same objective.
I think, yeah, I have to think about it, but at the surface, it seems like a very difficult problem.
Mm.
So that's why I was saying earlier that if you end up with one solution, as long as you know how to deal with a level and its enabling levels. You don't need anything more. That's sort of the claim, without any evidence.
No, but I think you may have something there.
So
if you're able to come up
with an adaptive solution that says when this level can't handle it and needs the help of the next level to go to a slower cache, or to go to a neighboring cache of similar ability. That's all that it needs to know.
Mm.
So it's going to be completely adaptive. It's going to be a local solution. And if we can show this works, then it smoothly generalizes to all levels.
Mm. Right. Good point.
So I think the goal should be to come up with a solution that has these properties. Whether we are successful or not is a different matter, right? I mean, right now we're trying to see what the characteristics of a good solution should be. And I'm claiming that if you have a solution of this nature, then you would address this problem of how we are going to integrate all these pieces.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think it's worth thinking more about. Let me think about it.
You need to say, if I am the manager of this particular cache and I don't need to know what level I'm at, all I need are its characteristics and its limitations, and
the
what are all the workloads that I'm supposed to be managing here.
Right.
And then based on this, I say, okay, I'm managing fine so far, and at some point I say, no, I can't handle this, so I'm going to palm off this to somebody. And the controller at that point figures out what happens to it. Maybe it goes to the next level, which in turn sends it to a neighboring cache at the same level, or it figures out some other way to deal with this.
I think that's a valid direction to think more about.
The solution has to be that way, because otherwise you won't get an adaptive solution. An adaptive solution should say, okay, I'm getting overloaded, so I'm slowly going to palm off some work to somebody else. Or I have enough bandwidth and I'm able to take on more. If you want, send it to me.
Yeah, I think the adaptive aspect here doesn't show up in the current set of directions. I think maybe it's embedded in one of these directions. But you're right. I mean, the basic problem that needs to be addressed is that the workloads are adaptive, dynamic, and working sets change. And at some point, some cache level might say, okay, I can't deal with this anymore. And to actually reach that conclusion, it needs to have a goal that it is optimizing for, right? And it needs to be monitoring continuously whether it's able to meet that goal or not, right? I think those are the two requirements for doing that sort of an admission control. And once you know that, okay, I can no longer admit the set of workloads that I'm currently servicing, then you need to say, okay, what is the remedy?
How should I downsize?
Right. What is the remedy there? Yeah. So the challenges there are, besides monitoring, also specifying the goal itself. What is the goal that I would like to accomplish? And that, to me, is the harder part, right? What do we want to do there? Do we want to...
I understand that, sure.
Okay. Right. And if it's something like, okay, well, can I accommodate all of these working sets and their wastage at this level? What does it mean for some goal where I want service time to be below 10 milliseconds? I don't know, right? That mapping is the harder part. But I see what you're saying, which is, okay, if you have a system...
Because you already have a tree structure of some kind.
Hmm.
This tree needs to be somehow exploited. And so your interactions need to be necessarily local. You don't want to send it to some cache that's way over on the other side of this, of the process world bank or something like this. So you have to go level by level, and at each level it needs to make decisions how it needs to manage itself.
Right. What would happen? So Giri, one further thought along this line is, let's say a cache is not able to contain the working set for some workload. It's not the same as, you know, saying, okay, forwarding it to the upper level, because the upper level contains a larger working set already. So it contains this. Yeah, it contains this. So the goal there is, what is the impact of the additional misses at the previous level on some higher level objective, right? Because now the cache access latency has just increased by a factor of 1,000 or something like that, right? So how does that map to some higher level objective? Maybe you're still fine.
So I guess what I meant was, I'm not really sure what these nodes correspond to.
So this is, for instance, disk. These are main memory,
okay,
something like that.
So let's say this guy decides that he's not able to handle the current workload.
Current working set for some workload.
For it's not able to...
To contain all the working sets.
Contain all the working sets.
And the wastage.
And the wastage.
So what it's, so it, then it picks a candidate one and says somehow this has to be palmed off to someone.
Why?
And right? Because that would presumably reduce the total load, and now it's able to handle it.
Right. So the reducing the total, or rather containing all those working sets is the goal then. Right, and that goal has to map to some higher level goal.
Yes, and as you said, that working set is already part of this. However, when this guy knows where each of those subparts of that working set are stored, in which of these next level cache?
It would be just one, because there would be only one path to a core, right, through all these cache levels.
And the core is down at this end.
So
it means then that the job has to be moved from that core.
Exactly.
So that's what I was saying, that it has elements that are very similar to virtual machine management, more migration, because now because your cache is not able to handle it, you're sending this off to another
yes.
core.
Yes.
And
so maybe
that's the relationship that I saw earlier.
So maybe the solution would be something as straightforward as, let's say, you have a higher level goal, such as providing a certain transactions per second, and then you're no longer able to meet that goal. And
because
then
of cache congestion.
Yeah, the
in
one
case,
of the...
In this case, you're only dealing with
cache contention.
Because of cache congestion.
So that there has to be some finger pointing to say, okay, this cache level is actually the problem.
Right.
And if that cache level is the problem, then which workload do I migrate out of the core so that cache level contention is relieved. Right. So that is one way of integration, which I think is a reasonable way, right?
That's
finger pointing based.
Yeah, that's a straightforward.
But that works
yeah.
only for the lowest level cache, closest to the core. What happens if it's happening somewhere
at DRAM,
up at a
at main memory,
at some other level?
If it's at happening,
say
at
happening at the L3 cache.
But this is finger pointing. You point out which layer is the
problem level.
Is the problem level, and you use the corresponding mechanism. You migrate across.
But if it's at L3 level, where is the...
You can migrate across processors.
Across processors like here.
Yeah.
Well, but that's only one specific architecture. Different architectures are very different.
We have different issues.
Yeah. So
that's one possibility. Maybe that's good enough. But do you see...
I see some
but
hope.
There are costs
involved.
You see some hope.
Yes.
But
I should do the visual survey.
Okay.
We'll find out more from that. Yeah.
Because ultimately, cash is a resource. If that resource is taxed, is overly taxed, something has to be done. Either you reduce the access to it, which you cannot, or you put that process to sleep, or move it to give it to some other process or core, or whatever it is that case may be.
Right. Yeah. I agree. So the finger pointing based approach may be a reasonable
and,
one.
And since it's a tree, you sort of know where you want to. Whom you want to ask for help.
There are two kinds of trees, right? This is a tree for a single workload, but there's also another tree, which is the tree of cache hierarchies, right? So
what do you mean by single workload?
This is the ERSS tree for a single workload. And we are sort of mapping various levels of the tree to the levels of the cache hierarchy. But even for the cache hierarchy itself is in the form of a tree, because at the leaves you have the cores,
yeah.
Right?
And they have access to the L1 cache.
Yeah, L1, L2, and then there is a shared L3,
right.
And then there is a shared
DRAM,
stuff like that. So I think this is the tree you're talking about.
Yes.
Right, okay.
So somehow, if this guy wants to send this workload over here, that might have an effect down there in terms of migrating the workload.
Yeah, that's true.
and that has other implications. You don't know whether that machine can handle the computation that's necessary for it.
Yeah.
So Ming, I think this sort of ties to the scheduling problem also, right?
Mm, yes.
And I don't know, somehow I feel, at least initially I thought that you could fit in there in the scheduling part of the proposal.
Of course, yeah. But the question is how much we want to bring from that perspective into this proposal.
I think at this point I would say bring as much as you can. The goal in the end, I mean, all of us should bring as much as we can, and then not feel bad about letting things go later on, right? Because,
if, for instance, let's say whatever solution we come up with, it involves migrating some job from one core to the next, but this cannot be done without understanding its other resource needs. And if you bring all of that, then it becomes way too complicated.
Yeah, that's
so all
that, I see. That's
right. Suddenny the level just jumps way too much.
Yes.
Right.
It's not a memory management problem anymore. It becomes a resource management problem.
Right, CPU
and your operating system does not deal at that level.
Okay. So yeah, I didn't mean that broadly. So yeah, I think we should restrict ourselves to the caching.
We can discuss that at the literature survey level, whatever we want, but ultimately the solution needs to confine itself to just memory management.
Exactly. So, for instance, I mean, what we want to say there is that there are other mechanisms that would determine if such a mapping is viable. From the standpoint of resource utilization across other dimensions like CPU and storage, right? I think we should just leave it at that, and then focus only on the memory hierarchy, because that other people are doing that. Other people are already figuring out what is the CPU utilization and dynamically mapping processes to cores based on that. Yeah, broad but not completely unrestricted, right? So what I really mean is that because it's the initial stage of the proposal, let's bring all the ideas out, and it might, some of those might resonate better with the other, with the rest of us, and then we could go after those.
So the deadline was what again? Was
October 9.
That's good.
Yeah, the reason I want to do this early is because there is a faster deadline in between, and I'm going to be very busy.
But yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think this is it's good to try to get as much of this done early.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of next steps, what do you suggest?
So I can do that visual survey, and if you can finish up that email and send it to us.
I was just writing emails to myself.
That's
how
okay.
I wasn't planning to send it to you, but I can. I mean, what I was hoping is to finalize some outline for the proposal, and then maybe based on your feedback, we can make the outline more. Flesh it out more, and we can take then at some point. It's mature enough so that we can take leads on certain parts of it.
If you want, you can put it on Google Doc and we can collaborate on the document.
I guess we could. Yeah, I could do that.
One thing that I'd be really curious to know is whether this wastage is, whether it's quadratic is enough.
We haven't spent any time thinking about it.
You only have experiments until 8. It would be interesting to know what happens if it goes to, say, 16 or 256 or whatever.
Hmm.
Because that would sort of tell us how this curve is going.
Yeah. The problem is that a lot of this work that Ricardo did was at IBM in India on their machines or at VMware on their machines. But we have machines that he could possibly run new experiments on, if I can get him to.
Would be useful to know, because then you could save some things there.
You mean if it continues to be quadratic, or does it does it become subquadratic at some point?
Well, if my conjecture is right, I think it's affected by subsets. In which case, it's probably more than quadratic.
More than quadratic.
In fact, I would guess it should go exponentially.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm saying that it's not just pairwise interactions, mm-hmm. but it's groupwise interactions. And
but I mean, you have more pairs than groups, right?
No, you have 2 to the n possible groups.
No, but these groups need to be disjoint, right?
Not necessarily. Well, you don't know that, right?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't spent any time thinking about it.
I mean, if we argue, for instance, that the effect of I over J and K over J don't just add up when you look at the effect of I and K over J, then there itself, it's going more than quadratic.
So you're saying this would somehow be...
Greater than? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is.
Okay. Well, that makes it an even more important problem to solve.
Because the flooding could get worse on I because of K, which in turn could affect J, right?
I see. No, I don't think so. I think so you're saying I flooding J, so I is flooding J, right? And J is flooding K. So
no,
you're
I
saying somehow that...
Both I and K are flooding J.
I and K are flooding J. So I, and I is flooding K as well, let's say, right? And you're saying since I is flooding K, maybe the flood rate of K goes up.
Yeah. Why not?
The flood rate of K will always be the same, no matter
that's the thing that I wasn't sure about, because this doesn't really account for the rate, because depending on the rate, you could get flood rate is somehow dependent on this window of axes, right? It's not window of time, it's window of axes.
Yeah.
So the window of time is very different from this. So that's the reason why the flood rate is not a time independent value.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
So here I think that the way the Ricardo was defining the flood rate is the number of flooding axes for a given set of axes. So it's sort of a time independent quality.
But that's a problem.
Yes.
It's not an advantage. It's a problem.
Okay.
Because if they slow down or speed up, your flood rate is now different.
No, but if you speed up, let's say, then you have flooding axes.
Then you have more axes in the same time window. You should have accounted for more flooding, but you're only accounting for less because you're counting the number of axes, not the time.
Okay, so the time window is actually a really large time window, right? So you assume that there is some stability of flooding and reuse for all workloads within that time window, and you're seeing like several floods.
But then one could argue that then you're averaging over a larger time window, whereas at a small time frame, the flooding could be much higher.
No, but if you look at the rate, you want to have
flooding is the number of things that are not going to be accessed later, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Some measures, right?
Yeah.
And of course, you're dividing by some number, which is maybe the number of axes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so you're looking at the average. So when you look at a large window, you're saying what's the average number over this time. But most of that flooding may have happened here.
Mm-hmm.
And so during that time, the effect could be much more nasty. And when you do the rate over that number, it could be much larger.
So here we are making an assumption, which is that this duration on which you're making an observation is much smaller than the size of a phase. And within a phase, the workload floods in a sort of constant or in a fixed manner. Right, so you don't see a lot of variation of flooding and reuse within a single phase.
Yeah.
So if our granularity of observation is smaller than a phase, then whatever flooding is happening at a fixed rate, no matter which sub-duration of that window you look at.
Yes, but now account for the fact that a lot of the wastage is probably because of differences in the speed. Right? Now, try and fit that into this picture. If you then use just your formula, your formula is totally independent of the speed. Whereas our intuition says that wastage really is coming about because of speed issues.
But we are talking about rate of flooding and the rate of reuse. So there is a speed. There is a rate related.
So look at the example that he gave us, right? The example he gave us, one process was just what was he doing? So it was just recalling the same page over and over again, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was A.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was
the streaming access.
Was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6?
Yeah.
The streaming
access.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, streaming and area effect. So, right, so this is what we had, right?
Right.
And then you had this. Right? And then, now if you change this, so this is really a change in the rate of flooding. It's a flooding rate change. Right? So you're flooding 2 and 3 instead of 1 and 2. And that would affect the wastage. So wastage here would be different than the wastage here because the flood rate would be different. Yeah, I wish this was presented a little more elaborately, but he sort of rushed through it.
But there is, although there is no time-related component, but there is a rate relative to the number of accesses in some window of time, some arbitrary window of time, how much, what fraction of those accesses were flooding versus reuse. But that doesn't tell me anything about what this relationship looks like. I'm not sure. I was thinking that would actually be less than or equal, and we are somehow overestimating the risk. But I haven't spent much time thinking about this at all.
Could be.
So Giri, I'm sort of relying on you to to take us to the next level here.
I will give it some thought, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know. I mean, I don't see any directions at this point, at least. Our data suggests it's quadratic, but like you said,
your sample is too small. Yeah,
yeah,
so that's why
small,
you
yeah.
really need. That's why I thought if you have the ability to do those experiments, it would be great to have a couple more time points at least. Let's say 16 and 256 would be great, if it's possible.
Mm.
Or even 16 and 32 would not be bad.
Yeah. Okay. Let me write to Ricardo and see if we can do that somehow.
Because 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 just doesn't give you enough information.
Mm. Well, what does give us some information is that, I completely forgot about this, right? I mean, all of this is for LRU.
Right. Yeah.
And I think in our proposal, I had
thought that we should address other replacement algorithms also.
But I thought he's done experiments.
He's done experiments for LRU, and these are not, these are actually empirical data, right? And we are assuming that the caches are using LRU.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. LRU is still the most widely used.
It is, but for instance, main memory caches do a lot more than LRU, right? They use all this fancy second chance clock replacement, and there is a lot of stuff that a lot more complex than LRU.
Stuff is pretty amazing, yeah. Mm. And the analysis is just beautiful.
So since we want to address all of these different levels of caches, then it makes sense for us to also look at the other replacement algorithms, and you really don't know what the processors are doing anyway. I mean, it's all kind of hidden, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's all proprietary, what the hardware does.
Yeah. The process cache is processing,
I don't know what it is either. And also they have, by the way, there is also this whole idea of set associativity, set associativity, which we haven't really, you know, addressed at all. So that may be another direction for this. So Ming, I would like you to think about where you feel is the best place for you to contribute. Given the scope of the proposal, I would appreciate as much help as I can get, because it's already fairly broad. And I see my role as largely sort of the integrator, right? To make sure that everything is, besides coming up with some original contributions, also making sure that the proposal is written well and has a theme that's very obvious and all that, right?
Okay, let's put in some thought and then get back together and see if things are heading in the right direction.
So when do you want to meet at least a few times?
Sure.
Until things get a little smoothed out?
I'm planning a week from now.
A week from now? So in within this week, what I'll try to do is to, you know, if I can maybe get some initial thoughts from you guys after today's conversation, after you have some chance to think about this a bit more, about where you think you might, you know, see yourself contributing, or what are the, let's say, research questions that you would like to work on. If you can send me something within, let's say, next 3 or 4 days, then what I'll do is before the end of the week, I'll put together some initial outline, which we can spend a lot more time on.
Well, I'm gone tomorrow and day after, so this weekend is a washout for me. So maybe I'll try and get you something in the middle of next week, perhaps.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
But then, to some extent, I guess there are lots of algorithmic questions. How do we manage this, or how contention can be characterized, or something like this. So those are, they may be more straightforward than some of the things you guys are grappling with in terms of the bigger picture and integration and so on.
Right.
Maybe my part is not so critical, other than identifying the problems before we meet.
Well, or we could do the following, that, you know, you don't have to formulate the specific questions, but just some general thoughts on where you see yourself going with this proposal, and then I'll try to integrate all of your thoughts into the outline that I will come up with before next week. And once we have an outline, then we can flesh it out at our next meeting, and maybe add more things to the outline.
That much I can probably even send you over the weekend.
Okay. Right, and Ming, in, you know, same thing for you. And in parallel, if you can spend some time looking at the related work, I think that would be helpful to guide us for our next meeting. If you have some, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, it's going to be very hard to cover everything by next week, but at least if you have some high-level idea of where that community is going,
I think that would be very useful. Okay. So should we meet same time next week? Friday 2 p.m.?
What date is that? Today is the 10th, so 17th.
It's Friday. Should be okay. My wife and I are planning to go somewhere next week before school starts. In the worst case, maybe Monday or after the semester.
Yeah, the worst case Monday because I have a chair retreat on 16, so it could be maybe washed out on 17th.
Okay, so I'll send out an email and then
we can decide
on that. Alright, great. Looks like you're really struggling with your cold.
Oh, yeah, I have a cold congestion.